Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and it's nice to have you with us today. This is our Talk Back program. Once a week, we encourage the audience from the beginning of the program to call in with thoughts, questions, comments, suggestions. That number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now, I'll be sharing additional information on the latest way of lowering your risk of death by 20%. That's a big help. Also, how we can overcome diabetes, what you can do to overcome fevers, hay fevers, and why is it that mental health disorders are escalating in children, young people. We have a lot on health and nutrition to share, but also on environment, including so much risk, so little benefit. The Arctic apple. Have you heard about it? A genetically engineered apple that doesn't turn brown? Well, we'll tell you why. Tomorrow is your last day to protest on it. Also, I'm going to give a whole series of brief progressive insights on China and the U.S. dollar, on the newest pollutant that is now found to be 7,000 times more deadly than anything else that we thought was out there, the other police state, the private cops, the most homeless children in New York City since the Great Depression, a commentary on Welcome to the Memory Hole, and how we are rewriting history by Peter Van Buren. I'll share fatal intoxication. Soldiers are dying in their sleep from psych drugs. Some of the personal stories. And also exposed American doctors and psychologists actively engaged in the frightening torture program since 9/11. Why is no one talking about this? We will. We have a lot to share. Let's begin. We know that we should be having a good amount of nuts into our diet. Now, not the deep fried nuts, but rather those that are raw, wherever possible, organic, and those are the best. Now, you have a wide variety. You have pistachios. Those are great for you. Almonds, cashews, walnuts, Brazil nuts. This is the latest. This is from the New England Journal of Medicine, and they say that eating a daily handful of nuts can reduce your risk of death by 20%. Now, researchers at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, Brigham and Women's Hospital, and Harvard School of Public Health looked at 30 years of data with 118,000 people. And what they found was those who ate one handful of nuts every day were 20% less likely to die from any cause over a 30-year period compared to those who didn't. In addition, the researchers found that it was less death from heart attacks by 29%. Cancer deaths were down by 11%. And the results are consistent with another study from Harvard University that found that the more nuts you consume, you have a significantly lower risk of gaining weight and being obese. So have that handful of nuts, throw it in your smoothie, or just graze. I have found that the easiest way for people to lose weight and get healthier and to detox is not to sit for big meals, but rather have food throughout the day, small amounts, like an apple or orange or banana, or this time of year, the Comus pear, the best real juicy pear. Then have a salad, but a small salad. Throw in some sprouts, radishes, tomatoes, nice dressing. Then later, have yourself maybe some rice and beans of some type, or seaweed rice and beans, but small portions. It's called grazing, just throughout the day. Now, that's not how most Americans eat. Most Americans don't eat a good breakfast, then start snacking because they're hungry and their body's craving fuel in mid-morning, and hence the need for running out to get something at the coffee break. Then they frequently are so rushed at lunch that they have a convenience lunch, which almost never is healthy, and they're eating it too fast. Then they have the same problem in the afternoon. And then they figure, okay, now I'll have a big dinner. And all that is a mistake. So small amounts of food throughout the day. That's the best way of helping yourself. Now, also they found that almonds, peanuts, pistachios, hazelnuts, Brazil nuts, cashews, macadamias, pecans, and walnuts all help lower the incidence and control type 2 diabetes. This was done at the University of Toronto. It was published in the peer-reviewed journal Diabetes Care. And so that's good for you. Nuts also prevent gallstones, diverticulitis, improve sleep by boosting melatonin, protects your bone health and reduces osteoporosis, lowers your risk of colon cancer, and lowers your risk of pancreatic cancer. So, needless to say, we need a lot more of these into our diet. Most people have this misconception that these are fatty and they don't eat them. You should. Just don't eat the deep-fried salted ones. From the University of East Anglia, a new study published in PLOS One, the peer-reviewed journal, shows that probiotics, the good producers of bacteria, can impact hay fever and reduce it. In effect, they're showing here that the more of these good bacteria that you're colonizing in your intestine, the less challenged your immune system is. And that's good. So my suggestion, 5 to 10 billion probiotics per day. A study from Columbia University that I'm going to take issue with, the title of the study has to deal with mental health disorders growing faster among kids than adults. Doctors' offices increasingly seeing young people with common psychiatric conditions. I'll quote this. It says, from Healthy News, young people are increasingly more likely than adults to be diagnosed with a mental health disorder. Researchers analyzed data from 450,000 patient visits to U.S. doctors' offices in a 15-year period. This was published in the current journal of the Journal of the American Medical Association Psychiatry. Quote, over the last several years, there has been an expansion in mental health care to children and adolescents in office-based medical practice. This is according to a Mark Olson, College of Physicians and Surgeons, Columbia University. Okay, here's what I believe is wrong with this story, and here's how I would offer a challenge to it. There is a book. It is called it is the Book of Psychiatry and Mental Health. It is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Psychiatry number 5, meaning 5th edition. They have made well over 245 conditions into diseases or symptoms into diseases. And a lot of those deal with children. Normal childhood behavior. If a baby laughs and a baby cries, which every baby ever born does, now they believe that that's able to say, well, that baby probably has bipolar, which doesn't exist, but they can say it. Just looking out a window, being distracted, not being able to focus, will get you diagnosed. And once you're diagnosed, you will be treated because the profit is in the treatment. So who's driving all of this effort to diagnose normal behavior as pathologies? The pharmaceutical industry. Step back for a moment, physicians, because I know that most of you are honorable people who believe that patients deserve to be treated properly. And that's commendable. Now ask yourself, would you buy a car from a dealer who had been convicted 300 times and had to pay $9 billion in total settlements for every kind of illegal activity imaginable? Would you say that's an honorable person that you should support financially? Of course not. you would moniker that person. Why is it then that you do not seem to have any level of egregious behavior by any pharmaceutical company or any of the talking prostitutes they hire that go to your seminars that you go to, not because you want to learn something new? The majority of people don't. They're going there because they must go to these continuing education seminars, which are farces and frauds, and sponsored by the pharmaceutical company that just happens to have the keynote speaker that afternoon talking about a drug that they're going to try to make sure that their sales reps get into your office. Those same sales rep that took you and your wife to a $2,000 dinner, chauffeured you in a limousine, and picked up the check even when you could order anything on the menu, including the most expensive champagne or wines. But somehow, all that is irrelevant to you treating a patient. This is a fraud. As a result, the number one cause of death and injury in the United States today is American medicine. That is a fact that is acknowledged by every major medical and scientific reference source. What they don't always consider are additional deaths from inside hospitals, like infections, bed sores, malnutrition, that take it above cancer and heart disease. They have it number three. It would be number one if they added these in. We did, using only their figures. So here we have one of the most corrupt groups of people in the history of the planet, pharmaceutical companies, who have no qualms about producing drugs that kill people, falsifying research, hiding bad studies, never doing honest placebos in vaccines. They'll use another vaccine as a placebo instead of never having been vaccinated versus vaccinated. They won't take that chance. And they never compare what they're doing with someone treated holistically. That is never in the equation. Why not? So when we take an honest look at all this, then we say, so how many of these kids come into your office? Do you look at some of the symptoms and look at this comic book, this Diagnostics and Statistical Manual number 5, which has no basis in science whatsoever? Not a syllable in this book is scientifically based. It is all based upon subjective analysis, and it is voted upon. It is not based upon any studies. In fact, there are no studies, none, zero, in any of the psychiatric offices that can prove the brain chemical imbalance that they allegedly believe is behind schizophrenia. You have no proof of that. Or ADHD. You have no proof of it. The whole field, then, is just rampant with misdiagnosis, corruption, self-dealing. And so that is why I would challenge any parent, just be aware of this. When you do not parent correctly, when you buy the love of your kid, as most of you do, when you have no boundaries that you're willing to establish, moral boundaries, intellectual boundaries, physical boundaries, where they can do anything they want whenever they want, and you have to catch up to them. And then they go up through the night and they're on their cell phones and computers, and then they are not eating right, and then they have some coffee or caffeine in the morning and a soda and sugar, and then they're bouncing off the wall in class or completely out of it, and now they're diagnosed, and now Johnny's got a problem because Johnny's going to be put on meds, and he's going to be put on higher meds, and none of that will help him. As all studies show, it does not improve anything, but it does increase suicide and acts of violence. Or did they tell you that almost every single mass shooter in the last 20 years has been on meds? Not once did any of these pathetic excuses of journalists for NBC, ABC, CBS, CNN, Fox, all of them, I would never hire any of these people for anything. They are so reprehensibly vile and such frauds because they never once questioned it. It's always the gun. No, it's the mindset that then makes the gun dangerous. If they didn't have a gun, they'd use a knife or they'd use their fists. Why don't you just ask any of the vets that I've interviewed, hundreds and hundreds. They weren't violent ever domestically before they went on the meds after serving in the services. and then they just beat their kids or their spouses until they were thrown out of their houses. You have no idea how many people I've interviewed, more than any other journalist I know of on the planet, because I took the time to find the truth, something these creeps aren't willing to do. Am I angry with American journalism? It's pathetic. It doesn't exist. No legitimate journalism exists anymore. They're not willing to take that time, to take months and months to find out, how'd you get here? Where did you live? You say you lived in Pittsburgh, you had a house, you were an iron worker, you had a backyard pool and barbecued, everything was fine, then you got into this conflict zone, then you started taking the meds because you couldn't sleep, and then you were always anxious, and then you came back and you just couldn't help yourself. You just had these rages that would just percolate up, and then you would hurt people, and then finally they couldn't be around you anymore, and you lost your family, you lost your house, you all lost everything, you ended up homeless, and here's where you're at. Did anyone along the way, anyone in the Veterans Administration, anyone try to help you? And the answer is no. And we have a million of those people. A million. You think maybe that's enough to get someone's attention somewhere? Certainly not at the New York Times and other raggy places like that that don't have decent journalists. But that's all right. Because I don't expect American journalism to ever do anything right. Ever. And therefore, I'm never disappointed. Finally, materialism. Now, that's something we're not into in America, are we? This is the University of Illinois. Makes bad events even worse. So, by the way, to conclude that, everything you're saying from Columbia University, you're wrong. And I'm ashamed that a place that's supposed to have some people with IQs above 40 would not do their homework. Is there no sense of shame in you academics at Columbia University? Are you so pathetically incapable of just doing the right thing and doing real scholarship and stopping at the door of Orthodox and go through it and see what kind of house of cards you're all playing in? There's a real world and it has nothing to do with universities. Try coming out and living in the real world with the rest of us occasionally. Come on some of the research trips, I invite you. And then see something off your sacred campuses and your ivory towers and your tenured positions. Here's the latest. In addition to its already well-documented negative direct effects on a person's well-being, materialism also wields an indirect negative effect by making bad events even worse, according to a University of Illinois researcher. Business professor says not only is materialism antithetical to individual welfare, it also has a secondary effect of amplifying traumatic events, everything ranging from terrorism to car accidents and life-threatening illnesses to make them seem that much worse. Quote, if you're a materialistic individual and life suddenly takes a wrong turn, you're going to have a tougher time recovering from that setback than someone who is less materialistic. In other words, materialism has a multiplying effect. Okay, let me see if we can guess why. Why? In fact, let me ask you, why do you think that people are so bound up into getting everything, possessing things? Why would they have a harder time dealing with life? Why would everything be overly amplified? Why would they be the ultimate drama queens? I'd like to hear your response before I give mine. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. But let's say hello first to Louise from Los Angeles. Hi, Louise.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon, Gary. Now, the reason why I'm calling is because I wanted to know what are ways to strengthen the heart, if there are any ailments or conditions going on.
Oh, well, what kind of conditions? The heart has hypertension, cardiomyopathy, atherosclerosis, arteriosclerosis, arrhythmias.
Specifically heart failure, congestive heart failure.
All right, well, that's a big one. That's generally when people, not always, but it's generally when people are overweight, when they have not exercised, when they have stressed their heart muscle for a period of time, and then fluid builds up in the lungs and can be very dangerous and around the heart itself. And there are several approaches that I would take. First and foremost, a comprehensive detoxification program. Are you familiar with detoxification?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Are you doing one?
Yes, I am.
What are you doing?
A lot of green juices, and I went to colonic, and also coffee enemas, so I've done that before.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, those are good, but that's only a small part. That'll only get rid of some of the debris in the intestine, which is necessary. But more importantly, you've got to start by an elimination program. The first thing that's essential for any heart condition, including congestive heart failure, because I worked with a person who had massive congestive heart failure, and it was to get them off anything that causes inflammation, because inflammation feeds the condition. That means no caffeine, no fried foods, nothing that is processed that can contribute to inflammation, and including arachidonic acid that comes from eating meat. Then you want to go to those foods that actually are highly alkalizing, like the green vegetables and salads, lentils and split peas and mushrooms and miso and other seaweed and seaweed soups. Also, starchy vegetables, rutabaga, kohlrabi, parsnips, turnips, sweet potatoes and yams. All of those are important, plus the juicing, and the juicing is really essential. Now, the juice that I would most recommend to help with heart, whether it's high blood pressure or high cholesterol or hyperlipidemia, would be a cabbage juice with purple grapes and seeds in the grapes. It's the grape seed and skin that are so important, and that's what you want. And I would have that juice twice a day. And then I would also start looking at having small meals and chelation therapy, because I think chelation would be essential. And also I would build it up to where you're doing about 6 glasses of juice a day. And then the nutrients that are most important would be coenzyme Q10, and building it up slowly with vitamin C, and vitamin C about every 2 hours. Apple pectin, calcium and magnesium, NADH, garlic, carnitine, lipotropic factors, about 50 milligrams of the B complex, vitamin E from a whole spectrum vitamin E, black cumin seed oil, borage seed oil, primrose oil, and fish oil, or omega-3 fatty acids, cayenne, which is very important, spirulina, cinnamon 4 times a day. Now, these are things that can make a difference. Okay?
Thank you so much.
All the best to you out there.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
And let's say hello to Tim from New Jersey. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Good, good. I was wondering, are you going to possibly do any follow-up shows having to do with the UFO extraterrestrial subject?
Yes, but just like our JFK series, which took 9 to 10 months of intense research, reviewing over 600 books and over 3,000 articles to come up with the 8 hours that we did, we have to see what is legitimate,
right,
what is credible, and we're in the process of doing that. I would expect this all come to attention sometime in the next couple of months, and we'll do
the next what?
the next few months.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be on our Progressive Commentary Hour on Monday night.
Are you aware of the encounter that Robert Morningsky's grandfather had?
Yes. Yes, Robert and I have discussed that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
But when we do a show, it will be based upon good science.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Thanks. I look forward to it.
Good, thank you. And I'll take more calls because it's TalkBack. Give us a call at 888-874-4888. Let me also mention that we had a lot of people who tried to get in on our normal 917 number, found that it was just filled up. On the one hand, we're sorry when that happens, but they keep expanding the phone system because we keep getting more people over 7 million minutes. So they've added two more numbers. So if you ever want to listen to my show, and for any reason you can't find it on the internet or you're out of range of a radio station, here are the two numbers. Please write them down so you'll always be able to reach the program. 401-347-0456 and 712-432-7231. 401-347-0456 and 712-432-7231. I'm very concerned, as many of you know, that America has become a national police state. We've been acting in a way that is against all of our interest. And Peter Van Buren agrees. What if everything a whistleblower had ever exposed could simply be made to go away? What if every National Security Agency document Snowden released, every interview he gave, every document traced of a national security state careening out of control could be made to disappear in real time? What if the very posting of such revelations could be turned into a fruitless, recordless endeavor? Now just imagine, right now we have tens of thousands of people who visit Progressive Radio Network every day because of our articles. Why? Because unlike the Huffington Post and MSNBC and all these other places out there in NPR, we actually have only articles on progressive themes from 45 or 50 different topics. So you really get an education, and it's kept up all day and even through the night. I actually pay someone who's up until 1 in the morning posting, and then again starting again at 7. So we don't have the same articles anyone else does, as I don't cover the same issues other people do on the show. But what if all that could be made to disappear? What if when you wanted to find information, you couldn't? Well, here's the reality. And I wanted to give you a heads up on this. As we edge towards a fully digital world, such things may soon be possible. Not in science fiction, but in our world, and at the push of a button. In fact, the earliest prototypes of a new kind of disappearance are already being tested. We're closer to a shocking dystopian reality that might once have been the stuff of futuristic novels than we imagine. According to Peter Van Buren, this is called the memory hole. Even if some future government stepped over one of the last remaining red lines in our world and simply assassinated whistleblowers, as they surfaced, others would always emerge. Back in 1948, in his eerie novel, 1984, however, George Orwell suggested a far more diabolical solution to the problem. He conjured up a technological device for the world of Big Brother that he called the memory hole. In his dark future, armies of bureaucrats working what he sardonically dubbed the Ministry of Truth spent their lives erasing or altering documents, newspapers, books, and the like in order to create an acceptable version of history. When a person fell out of favor, the Ministry of Truth sent him all the documents relating to him down the memory hole. Every story or report in which his life was in any way noted or recorded would be edited to eradicate all traces of that person. In Orwell's pre-digital world, the memory hole was a vacuum tube into which old documents were physically disappeared forever. Alterations to existing documents and a deep sexing of others ensured that even the sudden switching of global enemies or alliances would never prove a problem for the guardians of Big Brother. In the world he imagined, those armies of bureaucrats, the ones I discuss all the time in this program, technocrats, bureaucrats, plutocrats, they all work, thrive in Wall Street, Washington, corporate America. Remember I said it's never 1%, it's about 15%, all working cohesively together, but those who benefit the most, those who really control everything, who have the greatest ownership in multiple corporate interests, including banking, manufacturing, and have power over all the bureaucrats, technocrats, plutocrats. Those are the people that present what was not the truth, and they rearrange it to make it into a new truth. And hence, we're told this is the only truth. Anyone who expressed doubts about the truth of the present would, under the rubric of thought crime, be marginalized or eliminated. Increasingly, most of us now get our news, books, music, TV, movies, and communications of every sort electronically. These days, Google earns more advertising revenue than all U.S. print media combined. And in that digital world, a certain kind of simplification is being explored. The Chinese, Iranians, and others are, for instance, already implementing web filtering strategies to block access to sites and online material of which their governments don't approve. The U.S. government, similarly, blocks its employees from viewing WikiLeaks and Edward Snowden material, as well as websites like Tom Dispatch, on their work computers. Great Britain, however, will soon take a significant step toward deciding what a private citizen can see on the web, even while in their own private home. Within the next couple of weeks, almost all internet users there will be opted in to a system designed to filter out what the government doesn't want you to see, including what it calls esoteric material. Now, the United States is considering the same, but the question is, what is esoteric material? Well, it could be everything on health and nutrition and environment and activism and philosophy. Yes, that means that there would be no place for a progressive mind or Chris Hedges or any of the other thousands of people that we have interviewed to have their material read. And government-sponsored forms of internet censorship are being privatized. New off-the-shelf commercial products guarantee that an organization does not need to be in the National Security Agency to block content. For example, the internet security company Blue Coat is a domestic leader in the field and a major exporter of such technology. It can easily set up a system to monitor and filter all internet usage, blocking websites by their address, by keywords, or even by the content they contain. Among others, Blue Coat software is used by the U.S. Army to control what its soldiers see while deployed abroad and by the repressive governments in Syria, Saudi Arabia, and Burma to block outside political ideas. Now, since Google is the planet's number one search engine, I'll use it here as a shorthand for every search engine, even those yet to be invented, is in this way amazing and looks like a massive machine for spreading, not suppressing news, but just about anything on the web, and Google is likely to find it quickly and add it into its search results worldwide within seconds. And since most people rarely scroll past the first few search results displayed, however, Bing disappeared already has a new meaning online. It's no longer enough just to get Google to notice you. Getting it to a place where you post high enough for its search results page to be noticed is what matters now. If your work is number 47,999,000 on the Snowden results, you're as good as dead, as good as disappeared. Think of that as a starting point for the more significant forms of disappearance that undoubtedly lie in our future. Hiding something from users by reprogramming search engines is one dark step to come. Another is actually deleting content, a process as simple as transforming the computer coding behind the search process into something predatory. And if Google refuses to implement the changeover to negative searches, the National Security Agency, which already appears to be able to reach inside Google, can implant its own version of malicious code, as it has already done in at least 50,000 instances. The agency already controls a set of servers, codenamed Quantum, that sit on the Internet's backbone. Their job is to redirect targets away from their intended destinations to websites of the National Security Agency's choice. The idea is you type in the website you want and end up somewhere less disturbing to the agency. Yes. For instance, you can repurpose or redirect people seeking news to Al Jazeera lookalike site with altered content that fits the government's version of events. In 2009, many Kindle owners discovered that Amazon had reached into their devices overnight and remotely deleted copies of Orwell's Animal Farm in 1984. The company explained that the books mistakenly published on its machines were actually bootleg copies of the novel. Similarly, in 2012, Amazon erased the contents of a customer's Kindle without warning, claiming her account was, quote, directly related to another which has been previously closed for abuse of our policies, end quote. Using the same technology, Amazon has the ability to replace books on your device with updated versions with their content altered. Whether you're notified or not, it's up to Amazon. In addition to your Kindle, remote control over your other devices is already a reality. Much of the software on your computer communicates in the background with its home servers, and so is open to updates that can alter content. The National Security Agency uses malware, malicious software remotely implanted in a computer to change the way the machine works. The Stuxnet code that likely damaged 1,000 centrifuges the Iranians were using to enrich uranium is one example of how this sort of thing can operate. These days, every iPhone checks back with headquarters to announce what apps you've purchased. In the tiny print of a disclaimer routinely clicked through, Apple reserves the right to disappear any app for any reason. So you see, we are a lot closer to that unusual place than what many people believe was possible. The future for whistleblowers is grim. At a time not so far in the distant future, I believe within the next 24 months, when just about everything is digital, when much of the world's internet traffic flows directly through the United States or allied countries, or through the infrastructure of the American companies abroad, when search engines can find just about anything online in fractions of a second, when the Patriot Act and the secret rulings of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court make Google and similar tech giants tools of the national security state. And make no qualms about this. Google and Facebook and all the others, they're all tools of the national security state. And when the sophisticated technology can either block, alter, or delete digital material at the push of a button, the memory hole is no longer fiction. Leaked revelations will be as pointless as dusty old books in some attic if no one knows about them. Go ahead and publish whatever you want. The First Amendment allows you to do that, but what's the point if no one will be able to read it? You might more profitably stand on a street corner and shout at passersby. At least one easy enough to imagine future, a set of Snowden-like revelations will be blocked or deleted as fast as anyone can repost them. The ever-developing technology of search turned 180 degrees will be able to disappear things in a major way. The internet is a vast place, but not infinite. It is increasingly being centralized in the hands of a few companies under the control of a few governments, with the U.S. sitting on the major transit routes across the internet's backbone. Now, how should you feel? Well, that's up to you. I'm just letting you know what's coming your way. I'm Gary Knoll. More to come here. A lot more. Let's say hello to Nick from Arlington, Texas. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Gary.
How can we help you today?
Yeah, I got a question. This is for my mom. I'm going to be traveling next week to Kenya. That's where my mom is. She's about 70 years old, and she has all kinds of aches and joint aches and muscle, you know, pains. And she also has constipation, and just trying to figure out ways I can probably help a detox and that kind of thing. We don't really have, holistic doctors there. So, you know, whenever she goes up for treatment, she, you know, she gets painkillers and these kind of things. I got the pain stuff. and a few other supplements I'm going to carry with me. So I want to go there and try to work with her. I got a juicer and a few things. Wondering what else you can suggest that can help her.
Magnetic magnets are very good. Massage, mm-hmm. meditation. Mm-hmm. Music is one of the best ways of alleviating pain, lowering blood pressure, overcoming depression, helping with migraines.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to be soothing music. And
okay.
Also acupressure, acupuncture, biofeedback. Now, these are legitimate. Chiropractic adjustment, guided imagery, herbs, angelica, black haw, cramp bark, kava, rosemary, valerian root. Those are all good for cramps and pains. In a tea made of blue violet, chamomile, gota cola, G-O-T-U-K-O-L-A, mm-hmm. white willow, wood betony. Those are all very effective.
How about for detoxing? I was thinking, I know you mentioned that before, watermelon and with lemon and vitamin C.
Watermelon and lemon and lime are one of the single best ways of detoxing, and throw in some cinnamon.
Okay.
All right?
All right. Thank you very much.
All the best to you, Nick.
You're welcome.
And this is something I thought you would find interesting. We should, tomorrow's our last day that we can call to act on this. This is about the Arctic apple. And what we know about the Arctic apple is that it is genetically engineered to help it from browning. And it's been stalled by the U.S. Department of Agriculture for a period of time, especially after Washington State, which produces more apples than anywhere else in the United States, was working on a genetic engineering labeling bill. Well, now that they lost, now the U.S. Department of Agriculture is rushing it through, and tomorrow is the last day that we can take action. So here is my suggestion. Tell the USDA, U.S. Department of Agriculture, tell your legislator, you don't want a GMO apple. Apples are food. That's correct. So you'd think the U.S. Food and Drug Administration would be charged with approving the GMO apple for human consumption. Instead, deregulation of the Arctic apple is up to USDA, which is responsible for protecting U.S. agriculture from pests and diseases. It's just real convoluted politically. So you have no proof that this apple is not toxic, because they did not do any of the studies, long-term human health studies. So say no to the Arctic apple. Get your legislator and USA involved. Something I've mentioned several times, this is just the latest on this. China reduces its U.S. dollar holdings. Quote, China and Russia are quitting U.S. dollar, or at least significantly cutting the dollar share in their Fortex reserves. Politically correct American analysts call this process rapid Forex reserve diversification. In fact, some economists see this trend as a threshold in the unfolding world crisis, because the whole pyramid of global finance is based upon one simple fact. Financial regulators around the world buy the U.S. dollar or treasuries no matter what. Quote, it's no longer in China's favor to accumulate foreign exchange reserves. So, what does this mean in lay language? It means that Russia and China and Brazil and India and South Africa are working with their own currencies, and even though China in particular holds about $6 trillion, in the next 2 years they're going to be unloading those T-bills, and so they can shift off the dollar to their own mixed currencies, headed by the yuan, their currency, which means that then the dollar would no longer be the reserve currency, and you would see a collapse of the dollar. And with that hyperinflation, you would see probably 1,000% increase in bankruptcies. So I'm just letting you know, get out of debt and be in a position where you can be self-sustaining, because it's going to get rough. Say hello. Let's see who else we have on here. We can get one more person in. Anson from Queens. Hi, Anson.
Hi, Gary. I appreciate all that you do.
Thank you.
My question is pertaining to energy and sugar. Basically, I want to know if raw honey that's sold in a health food market, as well as cane sugar and raw brown sugar, are all three okay if you're in borderline for being diabetic?
No.
As well as for your diet. Are all three good for your diet?
No. The honey, the sweeteners that are best if you're borderline diabetic would be stevia, palm sugar in small amounts, and raw honey, preferably Manuka. Again, you don't need much Manuka, but that would be it. I wouldn't go beyond that. And okay?
Okay, thank you.
All the best to you. I'm looking at the clock. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen in. Just one final thing here, and that is the most homeless children in New York City since the Great Depression, from Michael Snyder. Quote, at a time when Wall Street is absolutely swimming in wealth, New York City is experiencing an epidemic of homelessness. According to the New York Times, the last time there was this many homeless children in New York was during the days of the Great Depression. And the number of homeless children in the United States overall recently set a new all-time record. And so, if you live, quote, in good America, I very much encourage you to read an excellent piece about homelessness in New York City that was just published in the New York Times. What some young kids have to go through on a nightly basis should break all of your hearts. Quote, she wakes to the sound of breathing. The smaller children tie tangled beside her, their chests rising and falling under winter coats and wool blankets. A few feet away, their mother and father sleep near the mop bucket they use as a toilet. Two other children share a mattress by the rotting wall where the mice live, opposite the baby whose crib is warm by a hairdryer perched on a milk crate. Could you imagine having your family live like that? The name of the little girl in the story is Dasnia, and every night her family sleeps in a city-run homeless shelter. Sounds like right out of a horror movie. So shouldn't we make it a national priority to help the 17 million hungry and several million homeless children in our society? Not just those in New York, but everywhere? I believe it should be a priority. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on our next program.
To PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.